Some of you know me. I generally tell stories about growing up on the farm. But I just ran into a story the other day. I thought I'd share a little short story. A friend of mine, businessman in Atlanta, was up in Iceland on business, and he picked up a wonderful little collection of stories from Iceland. And there was one I read that kind of jumped out. It was good. Now, I can't do it like the book does, because I don't have that kind of memory. But I'll just tell you this little story. Nancy was about 18 years old, lived in this little village, and she had a reputation of being fearless. I mean, nothing ruffled her feathers. Toughest young woman ever grew up. Everybody knew that nothing scared her. Anyhow, she was on her way home one day, walked by her daddy's church. He was a preacher there. And some friends of hers out in the back of the church were opening up a new grave. So she walked over to chat with them. And while they were digging in this new section of the graveyard, they hit something in the dirt. When they got it uncovered, it was a shin bone of a man that would run from his knee to his ankle. And that thing was about this long. She said, "Oh, pass it up, let me look at it." She got a hold of it and said, "Oh, I'd love to kiss a man that big." Then she threw it back to her friends and laughed and eventually went on home. Well, later that evening, her daddy was there and he said, "Nancy, would you do me a favor? I've left some papers by the pulpit there in the church that I need on this sermon I'm working on. Would you mind fetching them for me?" She said, "Oh, not at all. I've been going out after dark." Was no big deal for Nancy. She went on down to church, got in the back, lit a little candle in the back, stuck it up in the paper there, and went on down the front to the pulpit and found the papers that Daddy needed. And she turned around. There in the last row was a fella sitting. I mean, he was big. He was bigger than I was. He could barely squeeze into the pulpit. She walked on back and said, "Good evening, sir." He said, "Young lady, look at that hand. Cold. There's a day that it held a great sword. And this one a shield. Now it's just cold in my eyes. Oh, there was a time if I looked at you, my eyes would be filled with lust. But now they're just cold. And my clothes are raggedy and I'm covered with filth. But if you want a kiss, I'm here to oblige." "Oh, well, thank you." She leaned over and kissed him right on the lips. Said, "Bye, thank you very much. Good night." Blew the candle out, went home. Handed her daddy the papers. He said, "Have any trouble finding?" She said, "No. But I learned something new tonight." So sometimes you get what you ask for. I thought that was a great little story. Out of Iceland. And if you know anything about our ancient Celtic ancestors who are first kin to the Vikings, there's a lot of strong feminist stories that came down in that tradition. Growing up on a farm like I did, getting off the farm is where life began. How many folks here grew up on a farm? Sorry, place wasn't it? I was raised along Nassawonga Creek. Our farm was so far out in the woods that the sun would come up around 12:15 in the afternoon. And when I was a child, Grand Ole Opry came off the radio there in Nashville, Tennessee. Saturday night, anybody ever listen to Grand Ole Opry? It never got out to our farm until about Wednesday afternoon. We'd drive to town if we wanted to go hunt. But anyhow, I mean, it was, yes, sir. And cold in the wintertime. I remember when I was about your age going down the barn, my shadow froze to the ground. If you see me outdoors, you can see where it's all raggedy where I had to rip it off and keep moving. I remember once, this young lady over here reminds me of my sister. We were down the barn working one winter, and she was telling me a story. And the words would get out about 3 or 4 feet, they'd just hang up in the air and freeze. Biggest problem is to get them out of the air in the right order and carry them in and stick one at a time on the stove. so you could get the story in the right. Sometimes I'd make mistakes, and then it was like Pig Latin, you know, come in reverse. But if you held a mirror up, then it would bounce around so you straighten the words out. Do you follow that? Anyhow, I guess one of the stories I like, I usually pick ages. I was about 14, and I got to leave the farm. I talked a little bit about visiting my uncle this morning down in the other camp, or other storytelling area. I had an uncle that lived over in Carlisle County, Kentucky. And that's right over on the Mississippi side. And I'd been there when I was about 8 years old. Got in trouble with my great-grandma, and so I wasn't allowed to come back until after she died. But when I was 14, I got to come back. I'd accidentally killed her dog, but that's another story. And this time I got there, now my buddies at home had been telling me about, you go on the Mississippi River? I said, yeah. Woo, they got big fish there. I said, that's what I've heard. You're going to catch them, you're going to catch the biggest they got. I mean, you talk like that when you're 14. Well, when I got there, Uncle Ike looked at me and said, Jeff, heard you learn how to swim. I got an old flat wooden rowboat tied up there on the bank. You're welcome to use it for fish. I said, all right. Now, in the old days, the farms all had their own little blacksmithing shops. That's all right. She don't bother me. If she bothers the rest of the people, they may step on her. Nothing bothers me. In fact, I think the story may be too old for her, so it's all right. You can tell it to her later. That means you have to remember every word. But anyhow, I went down to the barn, and you know what blacksmithing things are like? You know, a forge where you put coals in, set it on fire, and you have a pump that blows air on it, like filling up an air mattress, and it makes it get super hot. And I got a couple old horseshoes, and I heated them up so I could work with them, and I made me a hook. Well, I was on the Mississippi River. I was going after a big fish. So I had a big hook. Two horseshoes. Of course, I thinned it out some. I wasn't thick like a horseshoe. I thinned it out some. Put a barb on it, all that right stuff. Now, there was an old bus piano down the barn. That's what set my thinking on this whole thing. I pulled out the biggest wire in that piano I could find. We didn't know about sport fishing in 1947. I mean, in 47, you fish to eat. So I would say for you sports fisher people, I was about a 2,000-pound test line that I pulled out of that piano. Now, the other thing I did is I borrowed my uncle's flagpole. Family flagpoles today is this wimpy aluminum. We did not have that coming out of the Second World War. We used U.S.-made steel. So I grabbed that little steel flagpole, wrapped that piano wire on it, put that big old hook on there, and I made me a dough ball bait. How many here ever made dough ball baits? Raise your hands. And those that never made any, raise your hands. There's more culturally deprived people here than there are culturally sophisticated. You do quick surveys like that so you know what to say. Well, all right, this young fellow wants to know what a dough ball bait is.
Yeah.
You take some coarse ground, yellow corn. Take some old corn, you know, you eat on corn on the cob.
Yeah.
But before you cook it, you grind it up and make it kind of coarse. And you have make see how I make bacon on the stove, how it gets that grease comes off bacon?
Yeah.
Well, you mix that in with the grease. And you get a, now normally you make a, maybe a piece of bait about that big, a little ball of cornmeal and grease. But I'm going after a big fish, and I've got that great big hook. So I made me a dough ball bait about the size of a volleyball. Well, you know, you can't put a little drop of it on a big hook. I put it in the oven around the hook for a little while so it thickened up and hardened and not lose it when it hit the water. The next morning, Man, you laughing like you don't believe a word I'm saying. I walk on my lips before I lie about this. That next morning, I dropped that dough ball bait in the water. It hardly hit the water when the next thing, wham, a fish took it and started dragging me down the Mississippi River at incredible speed. That surprised me. See, sir, I tethered the boat. Tethered me tight up to a tree. I tethered the boat to a small 100-foot oak tree. I looked behind my back. That thing was bobbing in the water behind me. And its roots was still snagged to a smallish 5-acre island it had torn loose. Looked like a giant cow flock coming down the river behind the tree. Don't shake your head, no, I was there. The speed of which that boat was being whipped over the water with that old wooden hull, rub your hands together real fast. See how they heat up? That's called friction. Next thing I know, that boat's on fire. And it sunk. It's not funny. This is what they call tragedy. It left me holding that steel fishing pole, barefoot water skiing down Mississippi River. Now, some of you look like you don't believe it. You check Guinness Book of Records when you get home. My name is in there as the daddy of barefoot water skiing. They do it in Florida now all the time. Fact is, I was timed that day at 96 miles an hour. Yes, ma'am. I held the speed record from 47 to 54 before Evinrude could get a big enough engine out on the boat to take it away from me at about 105. It's in the record book. I don't lie. I'd eat fried chicken for a lie by somebody. Well, suddenly that line went slack. I sunk. When I come up to the surface, I went to holler help. I don't know if you've ever thought about being out in the middle of the Mississippi River. That sucker looks as wide from the middle of it when you're in the water as it is long. And you know it runs up here from C-14 down to S-35. That's for the intellectuals in the crowd, like this town. Well, I went to holler, and all I could get is a whisper out. Well, see, when I was a child, I had what we call weak eyes. You don't see the treatments were different then. When I went to first grade, I had a pair of eyeglasses with lens yay thick, had straps to hold it on my head. As I've gotten older, my eyes have gotten better. I just walk in a drugstore now, I can pick up a little thin pair of magnifiers to read with. If I make it into my 90s, I'm going to have 20/20 vision. Well, see, they were still thick when I was about 14 years old. So I grabbed my reading glasses out of my bib overalls, and I laid them up in front of my lips, and I whispered, "Help, help, help." That lens magnified my voice. Yes, sir. Listen, people thought it were Judgment Day. In Vicksburg, they were pouring into the churches. Check the record. Boats come from everywhere that pull me out of the water. I was pulled out by a great big old stern paddle wheel. Tell you a little side story. I was over in Louisville, Kentucky. The Corn Island Storytelling Festival over there is in September. Friday, they took us out on a riverboat, a stern wheel called the Belle of Louisville. Saturday night, if you're ever up in that area for that festival, they get about 16,000 people turned out Saturday nights for ghost stories. They just had a mayor 8,000 when I was there telling stories, all out on top of graves, and no lights in the dark. Those people in Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky are weird. But anyhow, I was on the Belle of Louisville, and I thought the boat looked kind of familiar, but I didn't recognize the name. Went up to the captain's cabin. There's a brass plaque up there. Check it out when you get to Louisville. Had my name, the date, August 1947. And what all happened that day? See, when they drugged me out of the water, I was still holding that steel fishing pole. And I was irritated by being wet, so I gave a great heave, you know, to set that hook. That's when I found out that fish never moved when he swallowed my bait. It was the bait going from his mouth down to his stomach that whipped me the other way. Well, it was close to being a whale.
Probably a whale shark.
You ever heard of Jacques Cousteau?
No.
Well, he put 122 underwater photographers in the Mississippi River that range from up around St. Louis all the way down to New Orleans, and they got one picture of that fish that weighs 7.5 tons. That's a big fish. And when I popped that pole, out of the water come a dozen Guernsey cows, 7 hogs, a whole flock of mallard ducks that just flowed away, and up floated about 7 or 8 acres of corn they'd been feeding on inside that big fish. But what popped out next was a baby, 400-pound catfish with my hook caught in his tail. I was a lucky catch after all. Now here's the part some people don't believe. In the side of that baby 400-pound catfish was a fishing spear. And it had a line tied to it, about 30-foot line, and the other end was still tethered to the wrist of a skeleton of a man sitting in a little rowboat. And between his feet, I found a satchel. And when I opened it up, I found 500 mint new $20 gold pieces. Date stamp 1877. I thought, oh, this is my lucky day. Makes sense, though.
Yeah.
Well, it weren't. Got back to Carlisle County, Kentucky. Old Judge Vandegrift was there, recognized and claimed his Guernsey cows and hogs. Thanked me profusely for getting them returned. They'd been swallowed a year earlier by that fish, he said, thin as rails, and they'd been fattened up so nice he just appreciated what I'd all done for him, but he didn't give me no reward.
You already got your 500 gold pieces.
$500? You think so? You ever hear of the FBI?
Is that enough?
FBI was there, and they impounded and took away those 500 mint new $20 gold pieces, date stamp 1877. They'd been stolen in a robbery in 1878 over in Memphis, Tennessee. Apparently that robber had got himself swallowed making his getaway. That's when I learned as a young teenager, sometimes crime don't pay. And I've been ruined for fishing ever since. I don't know about you folks, but I don't never want to hook a fish like the one that got away that day. And to me, anything smaller than a 400-pound catfish ain't hardly worth bothering with. Now, I see some doubt Thomases in this crowd. I got evidence.
Baby catfish, there's 7 tons?
No, 7 tons was the picture of the big fish. The baby catfish is just 400 pounds. A ton is about 2,000 pounds. I'm about a third of a ton. But see, I was raised in the Depression. I don't know if you young folks know much about the Depression. I mean, those were hard times. I can remember, well, I was a year old when I was given my first baby jackknife, and I held on to it. You talk about problem in schools today, nothing like when I was a child. You year old, made it to your first year, you got your jackknife and kept those babies thinned out, so because you couldn't feed them all. You know, they came along one or two or three every few months. Orville Uten had 18 kids. he put a sandbox in the backyard for his youngins. Y'all know what sandbox is, kids playing? Yeah. He loaded it up with quicksand. He got down three kids, no time talking. And if your parents are here and hearing what I'm saying, make sure if they put a sandbox in the backyard, don't go near it. Anyhow, that's the jackknife we used. Cut that skeleton loose, give him a fitting burial. I don't lie about this stuff. Cross wire my heart, hope to fry for it, don't lie. See, I've raised it. Y'all don't know what depression, can't imagine what depression's like. I remember one year, we ate somebody's squirrel. Only meat you could get is what you could trap. We got to trapping squirrels. I swear, every time I heard a dog bark, they would grab me trying to climb a tree. And I remember a friend of mine over in Alabama, he ate so many possums in 1937, he told me he couldn't go near a highway. You know what a possum is? It's a little flat furry creature. Their relative goes to lots of people. Let me see if I can explain. Let me put it this way. When I didn't even have any clothes until I went to school in the first grade. They gave you a baseball hat like some of y'all are wearing so we could stand and look out the windows and all the neighbors thought we had clothes on. Like that. You think that's funny? I got my first pair of breeches when I went to first grade. And you know, you got plastic seats in schools now, right? We had old wooden seats with splinters in them. Have you noticed how boys will twitch and squirm a lot in school? You wouldn't long before you tear a hole in the breeches of your pants. You only have them. That's not funny. You'd go home, you'd have to stand on your head while your mama sewed your pants up. Look around the room of men my age. Why do you think they've lost all the hair on top of their head? It comes from wearing them out back in school. Isn't that right, sir? Now, there are exceptions. Once in a while, you'll get a man who reads and thinks too much. Makes those brains expand, pushes hair out. You women, you got a fellow that talks fancy, that's how you spot it. Or maybe they got mange. They tend to have dogs following around. They pick up that skin disease dog. You can't tell. Can you tell I got no hair up here? I'm bald right across here. I'll pass this on. I see some folks here might be able to use this. This is authentic folklore now. Yes, ma'am. This time's I'm straight. I'll let you know. I take a cup of sassafras root juice every morning. I carry a bottle with it. Come on, I'll show you. Open the camp. Get over there tonight. I take sassafras root juice. I mix in about a third green persimmon juice. Yes, ma'am. And a good dollop of alum in there. And you swirl it together, and then you rub it on that bare spot. Now, look, folks, it don't grow no hair. But it'll make them sides pucker up and close that hair. I wouldn't lie about anything. Reminds me of one time, this is a true story. I think I got time for about one more here. I do like to go fishing. No, I ain't gonna tell about that one. I did that this morning, that's terrible. This is a true story though. Storytellers tend to have it. It's real easy getting married, but after they hear your material 3, 4, 5 times, Steve's having that problem now back here. You tend to roll over into a new society. Anyhow, I was dating back a few years ago. I was dating a woman who, very successful real estate agent, made about $100,000 a year, had a fancy condominium. You walk up 3 steps, open the door. up a couple more steps in the beautiful living room, you know, with the white couch and the white chair. Well, she picked up in her work a year-old, beautiful and smart female Doberman Pinscher, just smart as a whip. And she was so proud, and she was telling us how she was training this dog. And you know how dogs are. As soon as you come through the door the first couple times, they're going to be up on the couch. You know that. So she taught that dog to stay off the couch. And she was boasting about how that dog stayed off the couch. Well, then the day comes that she's sitting there on the couch right after she came in, happened to put her hand down, felt this nice warm spot. Dog's smart. Every time the car pulled up out in front of the condominium, dog got off the couch. Smart dog. So she, after that, she told us how she'd come in, find the warm spot, call the dog over, go through the training again. She said, it wasn't no time at all, that dog's so smart. You couldn't find a warm spot anywhere on any of the furniture in the living room. Well, then come February, it's about, I don't remember what year it was, but about three years ago, I guess, we had a hellacious storm in the land. Lightning was cracking constant. Rain was coming in bucket loads. I'd been down one of the ponds fishing nearby, and when the rain started, I got my bait bucket and headed toward the car. I had to dump water out of the bait bucket about six times. I'm talking about a heavy rain coming in. Y'all know anything about heavy rain? Y'all use that old term, it's rain catching dogs? I have seen it. Walk right out of the house into a poodle. It wasn't unusual. But anyhow, she came in through the front door, and it was when she closed the door, she heard the thump. And she thought that dog was on the couch. And she couldn't believe it. And she was shocked and appalled. She walked up the three steps, and there was a dog with his paws up on the couch going, but anyhow, one of the things I do like to do is go fishing. And this is a true story. About 5 years ago, I'm off, even though I don't look like it, I'm a backpacker. I got an extension on the belt that holds the morning bag. And I was up on the Appalachian Trail. And we'd set up our camp, and I'd go on down to the headwaters of the Chattahoochee River, which is, up in that far up the creek, is only about as wide as the room here. And I carry a little backpack and fishing rod, you know how it claps on themselves. But this day when I got down there was an old mountain man, and when I say old, I mean he's older than I was. And he had a string of bass that I couldn't believe. Up in the mountains are like back in the old days. They don't have sports fishing up there. By the way, is there any bass fisher people here? Raise your hand if there's any sports fishermen here. Anybody you know fishes for bass? I know you're not going to believe it. You're going to have to try it. I was out in the land between the lakes in Murray, Kentucky at the college telling stories. I took a break and went over on one of the bridges to watch them fishing. These guys got a new way of going for bass. They were in a boat down below me, and the electronics had spotted some bass. And I don't do that kind of fishing, so I can't give the technical words, but they had these little paper sacks, like you eat, carry lunch school in, had rocks in four or five sacks. They had four Alka-Seltzer tablets in each sack. And they dropped them down where these bass were. The rock sucks the sack down, the water runs in. And you all have seen, I'm sure those of you ever had Alka-Seltzer, it cures you because it's punishment to drink that stuff. It's psychosomatic medicine. But you know how it rises and fizzes in a glass? Well, it comes up bzzz, in the water like that. Bass, and they told me that bass only fish dumb enough to think that these are wounded minnows. And they come in and swallow the chunks. And I've heard of people doing this to seagulls, stuff like that. I've not seen it, but the stuff keeps bubbling in their tummies. These guys are standing there with long poles and dip nets. And the bass, you know, when they swallow it, they just roll and come up to the surface. They got themselves a bass. And it's so new, you know, they got some big money in these contests. And There's no rules against it. I mean, I wouldn't broadcast it, but I would, because I don't get in the contest, but try it. I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but I've seen it that day. Anyhow, this old man had the string of fish. I went over to him. I said, I went out and I said, "Oh, that's a fine mess of fish." "Yeah, he don't fail. I hear his lip of green frogs for bait." "Oh, I never seen that before." "Did you? Don't stick no hook to them, no. You take the hook, tie it on one leg, and loop the line and tie it on the other leg so, like a prisoner, them frogs can't swim too fast. Bass love little frogs. Would you like one?" He said, "Oh, yes, sir." And he handed me this little green tree frog. Well, I went down the creek where I wouldn't bother him, tied him on, flipped that thing out there, and no sooner had that little frog hit the water, I seen a ripple over in the thrushes. And I thought, I got a fish already coming toward me. But it weren't no fish. It was a poisonous cottonmouth, water moccasin snake. I don't like snakes. Do you like snakes?
No, especially water moccasins.
Well, if they had legs on them, they would be a little better.
Why?
Well, they just move slower and different. Right. Anyhow, I'm trying to reel my little frog in so he don't get it. And just as I got a fishing pole that long, you know, and I go to pull him out of the water, and that snake reached up and grabbed his hindquarters. And I'm trying to shake that poison snake off my fishing line. That's bothersome. Well, I had some mosquito repellent with me that we use up in the mountains. It's the kind you take a swallower of and then blow the fumes around. There's quite a lot of it in the campground last night. It's called Black Jack Daniels Mosquito Repellent. I took a mouthful of Lindo and blow it in that snake's mouth. Whoo, he spit that frog out there. Second cast I got a bass about that big, which up that part of the creek is pretty big on the Chattahoochee. And I was getting them unhooked when I felt this bump on my leg. And I looked down. That poisonous cottonmouth water moccasin snake had done come back, holding two little frogs in his mouth. He wanted to trade up for some more of that mosquito repellent. Have you ever thought about trading with a snake?
No.
Me neither. So I took a mouthful of that Black Jack Daniels mosquito repellent and leaned over, gave him two droplets, just what he wanted. Laid those two frogs down, raised right up on his tail and licked my lips. No. You drink enough of that mosquito repellent, don't bother. He and I fished the rest of the day. He fetched me bait. Poor old fella had to swim home drunk as a skunk. Well, it's time to close. Let me give you one more little hint. I like to pass forward old traditional culture. Steve and I did this kind of stuff back in the old days here. I came to Florida in 46. Boy, you talk about hot weather. When we came down 17, and I was somewhere in this area of the state, I remember it was August. We came down, well, no, it was in June. We came through here in the middle of June. Middle of the day, we hit this area of the state on 17. If I had been there, I wouldn't believe it. Two cows out in the pasture rolled over on their backs. It was so hot that day, they were giving themselves milk showers. Ain't that utterly fantastic? But anyhow, we used to make, in those days, for you young folks, before they had air conditioning in Florida, we used to make duck necklaces. Anybody here old enough to remember making duck necklaces in the hot weather? That's a lost art. And I wish there were some ducks around this place. Get a piece of cord about that long. Tie a good stick on one end. And get a little piece of raw fatback cork about the size of the tip of your thumb tied on the other end. Just throw it down the ground wherever ducks are. You've ever been around ducks, you throw anything, they come in to inspect it. First one there, swallows that piece of fat back. It being greasy in the way they dance around. Right off the back end. 4 or 5 minutes, you've got maybe a half a dozen ducks on that. You just untie the ends, retie them, drape them over your head. You'll always have a bunch of wings fanning you the rest of the day. That's called a duck necklace. That's the official end of storytelling today. We have ghost telling here tonight.